This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Human-Animal Connection Show. Such a fabulous episode for you today. Animals and spirituality and something much deeper. So I'm so excited. I'm your host, Michael Overly. Jeannie Joseph, she's here to wow us all. And I can't wait to do this. Jeannie.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. The name of this episode is Divine Connections. So we've been looking at all 32 different ways in which humans and animals are connecting. But this is number 33, which is the spiritual side of it, which is how this relationship is more than just emotional. It's more than just physical. It's more than just mental. It's also spiritual. And that has to do with the fact that we are all animals ourselves, and animals and ourselves are basically, there's a level at which we are united. We are all one. And so this principle explores that aspect of our relationship. So we're kind of going beyond the model of pet ownership and moving into pet partnership or a divine connection with animals. So that's what we're up to today.
I love it. So I mentioned before we started recording that I'd actually had this conversation around the term or phrase ownership a number of times recently. Uh-huh. And I think more and more people are understanding that it's not a, you know, it's not a possession. Their dog is not this piece of property to them anymore. It's like, oh no, they're literally part of this other side of me, this other piece of me. And you know, they're a sentient being, they're a divine being, they're a creation of God, however you want to put it. And realizing that it's not something to just be dismissed.
Right. And, you know, we've gone through as human beings, lots of different cycles of relationships with animals, you know, treating them as beasts of burden and having them be not living in the same house as us. And there's been a lot of different stages. So I think some of us are approaching this new stage of kind of equals. What would it be like to see our animals as equals? Now, that doesn't mean that we're equal in every way. They're superior in some ways, and we have some areas that, you know, we can balance our checkbook in a way that they can't, you know. But I don't know that we can always do that, but you know what I mean? We have things that we have some mastery over, and they have other things that they have mastery over, as does every species. And so having that perspective changes the way we're willing to consider how animals should be treated in our world. And so that's why it's not just a semantic thing. We're not just, you know, picking on the words pet ownership. We're saying, hey, wait a minute. We need to change not just the language, but our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors, our actions. And that's why we're exploring this topic. We really want people to kind of look beyond that. And remember Will Rogers?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he had a saying. He said, if there are no dogs in heaven, I want to go where they went. You know, and the moral of the story is, you know, these are the nice creatures. You know, I want to hang out with the nice ones, the ones that are loving and kind and non-judgmental and loyal and supportive and playful and all this good stuff. And there's so much that dogs or any animals bring into our life. And we need to be grateful and also cognizant that they are bringing a lot more to the table than we give them credit for.
That's a massive point. But that's why I love your work so much, is you're introducing all these pieces and points of like, what? Really? Is that possible? You know, it's creating curiosity in people's minds that my dog?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, your dog too.
Your dog. Yeah, you know, your dog, whatever behavior there is. We all have things that we like and don't like in behaviors. But the fact is that the potential for going beyond this notion of pet parent, pet ownership, you know, like somehow we're in this hierarchical relationship where we have the goods and they're just kind of, I don't know. I mean, you know, there was a time when it was not believed that animals had emotions or that they felt pain. And, you know, it was just around 150 years ago where they would do operations on dogs without any anesthesia because they didn't think they had any pain. The humans have not been done such a great job when it comes to animals. I mean, we really need to make up for that. You know, we really need to say, hey, okay, we got to do better. And that's across the board. I mean, we won't get into all the horrors that we did last episode about factory farms and, you know, fish farms and places where animals don't get to move at all. But just one thing I want to tell you about eggs. So I wish I had the numbers, but eggs that are raised at free range hens that can eat grass, get out in the sunshine, have some degree of normalcy, their eggs have higher levels of vitamins and nutrients than eggs that are fed grain and never see the light of sun and are trapped in a location. So it may cost a little more to buy those pasture free eggs, but free range eggs, but it's worth it because you're getting, something like twice the vitamin level, nutrient level, and omegas in the eggs. So pasture raised eggs are much healthier for dogs. I'm doing a lot of research now on cooking for dogs and learning about the different levels, and eggs are way high up on the chart if they're pasture raised in terms of their potential for health giving elements, nutrients. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the chickens are actually being chickens.
Yeah, exactly.
they're eating bugs and digging in the dirt, and they're getting, because there's wonderful bacteria just in the dirt, right?
Exactly.
And so they're ingesting that. So yeah, that's what they should be doing.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing to think about, I mean, it's not always possible to buy organic food for your dog, but whenever possible, because basically whatever you're feeding your dog, that, like, let's say if you have a chicken that was raised on a factory farm, they never got those bugs, they never got the bacteria, then, and they got antibiotics, and they got, you know, crappy feed that they feed them. And so your dog is now eating the crappy meat product or of an animal that has been raised in captivity and without a good diet and without sunshine, vitamin D. And dogs actually can't create vitamin D themselves. Like, they can't go out in the sun and create it. So we need to make sure that they get good sources of vitamin D. And that, so the more the food you're feeding them is wholesome and healthy, the more likely they're able to get that nutrient. Because in the commercial pet food industry, because they have to heat the products so intensely, they strip them of all the natural nutrients, and then they have to replace them. So they put synthetic vitamins, which are mostly made in China, and they don't necessarily have the same benefit. They might have some benefit, but not the full benefit of vitamins that come from natural sources, from the whole food. So I got a little off topic there, but I just wanted to tell you that.
More of that later.
More of that later. That'll be coming. The next couple of months, we'll be doing a whole series on how you can kind of get started. And you know what's excited about, and then we'll go back to our regular topic, but I just want to tell you what's exciting is that what I'm learning is that you don't have to do 100%. You don't have to do 100% organic or 100% homemade every day. You could do 20% of homemade food. You could do 50% homemade food, and it would still have a major positive benefit for your dog. So that's, I think, what's exciting. That's so you'll be hearing more about that from us as we progress here. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, going back to this notion of divine connections, one of the things we explore in this chapter in our book, The Human Animal Connection, which is now on audio, by the way, you can hear the audio, the book is available on audio. But one of the things we talk about there is reincarnation real? Do animals come back? And I think a lot of people who had the experience of losing a pet, they've really asked that question, you know, is this animal going to come back? And I think everybody should explore that for themselves. I don't want to tell anybody what I think. It's a really interesting idea. What are your thoughts on that, Michael? Do you think that animals have more than one lifetime? Do you think that there's a continuity of consciousness that Darby, for example, your dog who passed, is might come back at some point or whatever?
Yeah.
What do you think?
So I think Darby came back, or was actually Sage that came back. So Sage was my first dog.
Oh.
And he's the one that, you know, basically helped me stay alive.
Yeah.
When I was a young teen.
Yeah.
So I think Darby was a reincarnation of Sage.
Oh.
And he's like, yeah. now we could really get into some deep stuff.
Right. So, now you're wiser. And yeah. So, you know, this is one possibility for people to consider, or maybe you believe it already, that there is more than one lifetime that we have, that our animals have. It doesn't mean that your dog is going to come back every time. You know, it's kind of rare, but it seems to happen. And there's one story, I wish I could remember now who told me this, but there's a story about a woman who had a parrot, and she was, the parrot was able to communicate. And the parrot explained that he had, I forget if the parrot was a she or he, but the parrot had had a previous lifetime as a Tibetan monk, that he was a very enlightened being and chose to come back as a parrot because he felt that people couldn't understand, you know, the human-to-human communication wasn't effective enough. And he wanted to experience what it was like to talk to the world as a parrot. So it's just so interesting to hear these stories. And I guess he had lots of information that was very authentic that this parrot in terms of this lifetime couldn't have known. And, you know, there's some real, I mean, there's lots of books that have stories like this. So unless everybody's making it up, it might be true.
Exactly. Well, I think, you know, the old model of, you know, 26,000 years ago, we started to domesticate the wolf. I have a different spin on that. I think the wolves were, you know, standing up on a cliff and looking down at us, fumbling and bumbling and making a mess of ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think they made an agreement. Some of them stayed wild and some of them came to help.
Yeah. I think that's definitely in the native traditions. They talk about that there was a point where there was a split, that some of the wolf dogs or the wolves stayed in the wild and some chose to come and be helping us humans. So yeah, there's definitely that tradition in certain cultures. So yeah, it's interesting. And I have this one, I just heard this one fun story from an animal communicator in Switzerland. Her name is Paloma, and she is an animal communicator. And there was a rabbit that she wanted to talk to, and she wanted to practice with this rabbit. And she went to talk to the rabbit, and the rabbit said, "I'm a philosopher. You're not at my level. Come back when you've learned more." And so she went away and did some studies, did some work, came back 6 months later, same exact answer. A year later, same exact answer. 2 years later, she comes back and the rabbit says, "Okay, we're going to write a book together." So they're writing a book together.
I love it.
It's such a great story. It's just, you know, this rabbit, "I'm a philosopher. I'm above your level. You're not at my level. You wouldn't understand." You know, and it's interesting because we sometimes assume that animals are going to be communicating at a lower level than us humans. And then we go and we have these very profound interactions that it's like, sometimes I feel like I'm talking to the Buddha or whoever the level of profoundness and awareness and compassion is sometimes staggering. And not in all cases. It's the same thing with humans. It's like, you can have human conversations with people that are very superficial and, or very whatever, you know, they're locked in their own whatever thinking patterns. And then you can have conversations with people who are aware, and it's very exciting. So there's a range with animals, you know, just because they're animals, they're not like on some super high level, we're on some other low level or high level. Everybody's at different levels, wherever they are in their process journey. And from the point of view of reincarnation, we're just going to keep going until we've got it. And then maybe we'll say, okay, I had enough of that. But it's like, I don't know, do you think that animals, some people think that animals reincarnate as animals and humans reincarnate as humans, but they don't think that they cross over. Like humans don't go back and be an animal like this parrot did. You know, I don't know. What are your thoughts about that?
I think when you remove us from whatever this shell or vessel is, we're something completely different, you know, as a soul. And I think we can choose to have an experience that we desire in order to continue our growth and expansion. So yeah. I can come back as a mouse if I think that would serve me, right? I don't think there's any hard and fast rules for anything anymore, not after what I've experienced. So
Right. Exactly. So it's just really something interesting to explore. And, you know, maybe we don't know the answers, but I think that living with the question is a fruitful thing to do, to just say, well, what if this dog that's laying at my feet, this crazy foster dog that we have, you know, sometimes she looks at you and it's just like, oh my God, what is she saying? What is she seeing? You know, it's so profound. And other times it's like, you know, she's just a crazy dog chewing on my shoe, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that's how it is with us humans too. Sometimes we can have these very profound moments of wisdom, understanding, awe, gratitude, compassion, and the next minute we're like rah 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 rah, you know, whatever, blah blah blah, you know, something is bothering us, and we're all twisted up in it. And so that's kind of the truth of experience, I guess. I mean, maybe there's some point where you get beyond all that. I haven't gotten there, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know what the answer is to that after we leave this plane this time,
right?
But I'd like to think it can be anything.
It could. Well, on that note, why don't we take a short break and we'll come back and explore divine connections further.
Hey, friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the Human Animal Connection Show. We were talking about some fun and amazing things before, and I'm still cracking up about the rabbit telling Paloma that I'm a philosopher.
You're not at my level.
Come back when you're ready.
Yes. Very funny.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Yeah, I told you about that mouse in the shelter that I had a very profound connection with. You know, you just never know who's going to show you something that's just like going to rock your world, you know, if you're willing. So,
Well, yeah. I told you about the horse I was working with. Well, the horse is, right? There was two of them over there. And the one, Teddy, he's like, no. Just go away for now. And, you know, and the other horse, Penny, she's like, shit, come here, love me. And that was hilarious. I was like, hilarious. I'm like, but I'm a mighty human, you know?
Right. Don't you want my presence? Very fun. Well, you know, it's so good to just ask these questions. You know, even if we don't have the answers, I don't know that we're going to get the answers, or I can't give the answer to somebody else, but I could just say, hey, see what you think, you know, feel it out, explore it, consider it, try it on for a month. Consider the possibility that that animal that shares their life with you has had other lives and will have other lives beyond the one that they have with you right now. And what does that mean in terms of the potential of exploring that relationship? And is there a way that you could say, hey, you know, I want to keep that communication channel open if you do decide to leave? Because one of the issues with having animals share our lives is it's, they're probably going to leave before we do. I mean, sometimes the humans leave first, like in Lulu's case, her person died, the one that we're fostering. And that's part of why she has such separation anxiety, is that person died in her presence and she was stuck in the house with a dead person, you know? So, you know, these are tough things that happen. And she has those memories. So those memories haunt her when I think that I'm going to leave, just even thinking about leaving. So. But anyway, one of the things I want to talk about in the human-animal connection, our first principle has to do with the principle of goodness. And what this means is that beyond behavior, like there are behaviors that Lulu does that I don't like, you know, there are things that she does that I would, you know, you could call them bad behaviors, but I have to keep remembering who she is, what she's come from, and that she's a good dog, even when she's doing behaviors that I don't like. So behaviors can be good or bad, but the dog is still good. And that perspective changes, you know, helps me to continue to refine my patience. I have to continually refine it because she does things that I definitely don't like. But it's when she does that, it's an opportunity for me to get bigger, bigger of heart, bigger of compassion, and to expand my sense of goodness, so that goodness includes even her chewing my shoe, even her chewing apart a flower pot, even her jumping up on the kitchen table. She likes when I leave the house, so she can watch me leave. She jumps up on the kitchen table, you know. So these are things that I don't like as behaviors, but I know that she's a good dog. And when I'm in that space of knowing her goodness, feeling her goodness, it gets better. These behaviors begin to soften. They haven't gone away yet. but they soften. And the other thing that softens is my reaction to her, because I can say, Lulu, get down. You know, I don't have to turn into Godzilla just because she's turned into Godzilla. Right. So we're working it out. She's come to teach us quite a bit here. Yeah.
Well, of course. Yeah. Right. So, and this, you know, we talked about a little bit about this as well before we started today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my friend Tommy Hartley did this presentation, and he was helping these other people who were veterans in the dog world mm-hmm. understand that you're not going to be able to mold this dog into whatever it is you think you want.
Right. Right.
And expanding our level of patience, our level of acceptance, like, you know, I'm going to give this dog everything I've got, but she may not meet my expectation of what that is.
Right.
And, right. And I think that's just really important for people to understand that, yeah. you know, especially when we're talking about rescue animals who maybe yeah. been traumatized, whatever,
yeah.
You do the best you can, and you right. provide them with as much love as you can. Mm-hmm. And that's good enough.
Yeah. And it's good enough. And the lesson is that, like your friend Tommy was saying, is sometimes it's not enough to change. I mean, I would love, you know, since we're in the work of doing therapy dog work, going into classrooms with our program, Canines Teach Compassion, and I have Sophia, who's a magnificent therapy dog, and although she wasn't at first, it took 3 years, you know, she was a feral dog and quite scary. But Lulu, you know, I know that the teenagers, that if I brought her into class, they would love her. I mean, her hair's a mess. They can brush her. It's very fun. But she's too scared. She would mm-hmm. turn into Godzilla. And I may never be able to bring her there. You know, like my goal would be, oh, I want another therapy dog, you know, if I was going to. But she may not. And so that's mm-hmm. part of really the process, is seeing the dog for who they really are, instead of, like your friend said, who you want them to be. They may or may not. And it's a little bit humbling, because we have all these powerful methods, and we've done wonderful work with Lulu. I mean, she's amazing, you know, so it's not like she's not making progress, but bottom line is sometimes love is not enough. You know, she's got neurological issues. I think, you know, sometimes she will get stuck. She'll get frozen and just sort of stare for a moment, and then she comes out of it. So she's got some issues that I may not be able to fix. So yeah. That's what happens. Yeah.
So how can you just give yourself and her a break?
Right.
And be open to, hey, maybe this is as good as it gets. And if it gets better, fantastic.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. Yeah. You know, okay, I think we all have this fantasy dog in our mind, or something, you know, like Prince Charming or the princess, or, you know, these archetypes of what we hope will be the dog that we're going to adopt from the shelter or whatever. And then we bring home the dog and find out who the dog is.
Yep.
And it's different.
Yeah. No, I've ended up with Snoopy, Cujo, Scooby-Doo.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? And none of them are what I thought I was going to get.
Right. Right. Exactly.
That, yeah. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things about Lulu, she's very willful. She's not interested in obedience. I mean, that's not her deal. You know, like I don't want to say it now, but Lulu, come, you know, I don't want to say it too loud, but she's like, no, you know what I mean? It's just like, that's not her deal. And she's not here to perform in that way. And of course, I'm used to being able to train therapy dogs, and it's all about all you have to do is whisper the command, not the command, the cue, and they will, because they want to please, you know. And Lulu's like, no. So yeah, life with a dog, life with a dog. But
right. The dog you need, right? Not the dog you think you want.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot of issues that relate to my life, you know, yeah. So we're in it together. We're in it together.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I was just thinking about, remember Charlotte's Web? Did you ever read that as a child, the book?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's, remember when, the spider, they, you know, Wilbur was going to be eaten, right? The pig was going to be eaten, and they asked Charlotte to help and put something in her web. And she spun the words, some pig, you know, and that was enough to make the farmer go, wait a minute, this is not a pig we should eat. This is a pig we should let live. And you never know what it is that's going to wake people up, you know, what message it is. Because we know we can't preach, because preaching like, eat your vegetables, don't eat animals, you know, all these things, you know, we can't tell people what to do. So it's always like, what is it that's going to wake people up? And like that spider putting the two words, some pig, and that was enough to make the farmer go,
Yeah. Well, and that's the point, right? Is how do we get our message across, but in a way that creates curiosity?
Right.
Because, you know, when you're standing on the podium and telling, dictating how people live their lives, not going to go well, right?
Not going to go well. Yeah.
Curiosity is so powerful.
It's so powerful. And just to recognize that everybody needs to come to choices on their own, you know, so how can we lead them to that point where they are curious about a different choice? And I guess that's what our message is with this Divine Connections, is whether or not you currently have a belief system that includes animals being conscious or continuity of consciousness over multiple lifetimes or multiple lifetimes in general, what would it be like to consider that as a possibility? And that maybe the animal who shares your life, it's not the first time you've met, if it's an important relationship. And what does that mean? What does that mean for the future? What does that mean for the present? Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that, you know, once we start opening that, we also open the possibility of animal communication. Like what are the ways that animals want to communicate with us? Like with Lulu, sometimes she'll just stare at you, stare at me, right? She'll just give me this like look, and it's a little unnerving, you know, because I don't always know what she's saying. It's not clear what she wants. And I have to work at this. I have to get better, because I know that she would like to say something and I haven't. Sometimes I hear it. I mean, I'm not saying I never hear her, but there's sometimes where I don't hear her. I can't hear her and I want to. So
I get that. I think it's more difficult when it's your own animal, my opinion, because you're too close.
Yeah.
Maybe you hear something you don't want to hear.
Right, so, exactly.
I mean, even Dana's picking up on things. Now, I never make a point of it, but I go, wow, that's really interesting. Uh-huh. We'll do something with Indigo and she'll like give you this look. And, and we'll look at each other like, did you hear up ears? Yeah, I heard up ears. But it's just interesting watching her pick up on these messages that are coming across. And because Indigo is very expressive.
Yes.
Which is fantastic, because I couldn't convince Dana that she's actually hearing messages from Indigo.
Right.
She's naturally getting, she goes, did you see the look she got? I'm like, oh yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I really believe that animals are communicating all the time, you know, and it's just, sometimes we're listening or watching or paying attention and sometimes we're not, just like with humans, same thing. Sometimes we're attending to another person and sometimes we're, the lights are on, but we're not home, you know? So, yeah. Well, I hope people will consider the possibility of the relationship with the animals who share their lives as being a divine relationship, and the possibility of going deeper with the divine connection, and to just explore that, whatever that feels like to them. It doesn't have to be any one specific thing. It's not like we have all the answers. It's just, what do you experience when you open that possibility up for yourself and for your animal? And we'd love to hear your thoughts. So please let us know what happens when you take on the question of the divine connection between humans and animals.
Yeah. And open it further. There might be just a sensation or a feeling. You may not hear words, right? Oh, what is that?
Right.
So, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, in the beginning, you may or may not be right. It could be your projections, but as you get better at it, you'll begin to really tell the difference between what is a message, you might say, from the animal to you, and what is just your own thoughts, your own psyche. So by paying attention, you can feel the difference, that there's a difference between receiving a message and just thinking. So over time, you'll feel the quality of difference. Like my thoughts have a certain, like, syntax, you know, grammars, you know, subject, verb, adjective, whatever, but animals will often give you the whole experience in a moment. Do you know what I mean? So that's something that you can feel the difference between those two kinds of communication. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Michael, for being a wonderful host for these 33 episodes, introducing the world to the book, The Human-Animal Connection, which you can read and you can also listen to it since it's an audio version. And hopefully you've enjoyed these podcasts, and we're going to begin a new series where we'll be interviewing some other people. So I hope you'll be with us for those shows too.
Absolutely. What an honor. Thank you so much for bringing me in to share your message and your work. This has been wonderful.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone. We'll say aloha for now.
Aloha for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services. You can reach Michael Overly, author of Let Your Dog Lead, Musings on How to Create an Exceptional Life, on his website at dogsandmen.com or email michael@dogsandmen.com.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.